You know what I've missed most about sports since we've been sheltering in place? Just going to a spot and watching a game with friends. It's just not the same watching it at home. Even when the Warriors are winning, it's just not the same. But luckily, the Athletic Club Oakland, they've got our back. Did you know they shut down the entire side street next to them just to create the Town Gardens? The spot is amazing. It's got TVs everywhere, comfortable seating. It's got their full food and bar service. I mean, this place is dope. I went the other day with Bram, and officially, it's our go-to spot for all sports, especially the Dubs. So hopefully we'll see you there. And as a special thank you, if I see you wearing a Warriors Huddle shirt, next beer is on me. The Athletic Club Oakland, that's where sports fans can finally be sports fans again.
Nice, like tonight. That's what we play for, to get the fans involved and appreciate that that love and that energy. And shout out to Baron Davis. I definitely channeled my Kirilenko moment. I ain't dunk on nobody, but I wanted to channel the same celebration. So shout out to BD.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram, with me per usual, my boy and producer, Marcus.
What's up, Dub Nation?
And our master, all things sound, Maxine.
How's it going?
Boys, emergency record episode. We've got big things, baby. Yeah, little playoffs coming, a huge matchup against the Lakers. So I had to convene you guys immediately. That means a couple of things. One, no guest. Two, I'm going to go ahead and sound like audio speaking throughout this episode. Did not have my mic, don't have my headphones. I'm doing this on like a Zoom speaker call. So, you know, this is how much we love you guys. We threw all quality out of the window just to make sure you got an episode immediately.
Nice. Yeah, you do sound kind of but thank you for joining.
Okay, I'm just switching. You're no longer my boy and producer. Can we re-record this? Then? With me, as always, the narrator, Steve Urkel. Go yourself, Marcus. Let's talk glass half full, boys. Not a lot of Warriors history to go back through. In fact, only one game. So take a look at that Memphis game. Give me something you like and don't like. I'll go first so I can pick off some of the low-hanging fruit. I love that Steph won the scoring title at 33. So look, I shouldn't care. I should not care about this. Steph has won three titles. He's won two MVPs. He's even won a scoring title before. I was there for all of it. I sucked it all up. I should be above individual accolades like this one. But guess what? I am not. I'm not above it at all. And it's for multiple reasons. Reason number one, it mattered to Steph, right? I mean, towards the end of the year, not only what he said, but what he did made it crystal clear that he wanted this thing. You know, I think he entered one of those games needing 24 for the game and put up 24 in the first quarter. So, you know, if it resonates with the MVP, it resonates with me. But the second thing I love about this is it's an ace up our sleeve for the bar arguments that are going to be speeding our direction. When Steph hangs them up, we've already seen them now. We're going to find ourselves in those no finals MVP ridiculous, stupid-ass conversations where we're suddenly having to defend Steph's legacy and, you know, his status as a franchise player. And it's things like this, scoring titles, despite being guarded by all five members of the other team, that we're going to throw back. So, yeah, the thing I like is Steph proving his historical status and really establishing himself as the man at the age of 33.
Yeah, hell yeah. And I think at this point, everybody listening probably saw the stat go up on the screen. But look, we're talking about Mike, Wilt, and Kareem that he's now in the same pantheon with in terms of multiple scoring titles, multiple MVPs, and multiple championship rings. And I mean, that settles the argument in those bar conversations right there.
I love that you went first name. Are you pretty close with all three of those guys? Like on text conversations, probably?
Of course. Yeah. They join my meditation circle, which KD is still not a part of, but
you probably threw out a text the second that he got the scoring title saying, do you mind if I add Steph in here? Is that all good? I'm sure he would also want to be a part of these conversations.
Yeah. And they accepted now that he's in that pantheon with them. So
obviously.
Of course.
I'll go. I think, so things that I liked and don't like, I liked watching a Warriors game that mattered for the first time in a really long time. It was such a refreshing feeling and one that I missed. Like, I was sat down and was like, okay, the Warriors are on, and then turn it on. And I was like, oh, shit, this game matters. And it had a playoff intensity to it. There was just hype around it. There was that energy that it mattered. And it just, I remember and, you know, feeling that in previous games. And I heard about it leading up to this one, obviously, but it was different when I started watching. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot what this feeling was. And it's just amazing.
It's like going back to a restaurant that you love that you haven't been in for a long time, right? Because like at first it's just concept, like, oh, we're going back to the playoffs. Like, great, but there's no specifics. And then you show up and like the intensity, how much you care about every single possession, how much you end up hating the opposing players, even if you don't really have a shared history with them. I like that. And I'll take it maybe not a step further, but I'll associate it in with another like. Here's something else I like from recent history. Broken point guard pictures. After the Phoenix game, when they had a close-up of Chris Paul, it looked like someone had just recently like broke into his house and stole his dog. During the Memphis game, after Dylan Brooks fouled out and they watched him or filmed him watching, it looked like we were, I don't know, having like a documentary of him watching his house burn to the ground. So I just like that. I like watching Steph's brilliance slowly suck the confidence and skill set out of, you know, the best athletes on earth. I'll give you a don't like, and I'm kind of embarrassed by it. You know, it is what it is. It's not the first embarrassing thing I've thrown into this mic, but going into the game, our Patreon supporters, who mean the world to me, they mean the world to us, we're actually going to watch the game together, and they had a Zoom call, and I couldn't participate in that because I'm a madman when it comes to the game, but I said, hey, afterwards, I would love to check you guys out. Let's see what happens. And then I may or may not have gotten a little hammered, may or may not have celebrated a little bit too hard, and I didn't jump on the Zoom call, and now I feel like terrible about it. So that's what I didn't like, man. You know, I apparently couldn't keep my celebration to responsible levels and may have gone a little bit too big.
Yeah, well, that offer was extended to all three of us, or that invite was extended to all three of us, and I also regret not being able to make it. So I'm right there with you. I didn't get quite as hammered, but actually we're moving, my wife and I, so it was a little bit of a hectic day. I actually got to hang out with Tim Roy for part of the first half of the game because I couldn't even watch. But I will say that even though I missed out on that, what I loved watching, especially when I could watch in the second half, was – you know, the part of, I think, what deflates opposing point guards like you're talking about is how exhausting it is to stick with Steph for an entire game, right? I think they came out pretty hard in that first quarter, right? They got off on a 17-8 run early, but I knew it wasn't going to last because, like, Steph's fitness is just unparalleled. And I think what I particularly love is that we, at the beginning of the season, were watching a bunch of bit players around him that were basically slowing him down, getting in his way, not allowing him to do his off-ball action. And not only were we seeing the opposite of that now, but I want to particularly highlight how excellent Jordan Poole has become moving off the ball. I've started to see somebody that I actually can really trust, and I'm really excited by how he's sort of picking up the mantle of some of this energy, because that's part of, I think, what makes this Warriors team so exciting to watch.
We've got some pool questions down the line. I'm going to jump on this broken point guard thing real quickly. I can remember, I think this is in high school, although I'm sure it happened more than once, studying my balls off for a test. I mean, just, I was all the way in. I'm taking this serious. I'm going to do well. I took the test and did not do well. And the feeling that comes after that, that like, oh, I gave what I had and still didn't succeed, sucks so badly. And you know who must have been feeling that? Chris Paul and Dylan Brooks. I mean, let's take them from the bottom half. Dylan Brooks is not that successful of a player yet. You know, he's kind of a new guy. He was on fire in that game. He was their go-to guy. He's the reason why they came back from a 20-point deficit. So, I mean, looking in the mirror, he did everything he could. He prepped for that test, boys. And guess what happened? He found himself on the sideline with a fucking towel on his head watching Steph do better. Same thing for Chris Paul. You know, and in a season defined by Chris Paul's success, in a season where people are pointing to CP as an MVP and Phoenix as one of the best teams in the league, CP3 came in, was absolutely dominant, did everything he needed to do. And at the end, what happened? He shook Steph Curry's hand and had to tell him good game because he lost to him again. So yeah, that frustration has got to be nasty. But boys, my God, am I burying the lead. The Warriors are speeding towards one of the biggest one-game playoffs that I think I've ever – I can't remember any one-game playoffs in my my basketball watching history. And I've got a Warriors Oracle section that is dedicated only to the Lakers. Here's our first question. Quote, give me a reason the Warriors can win the game on Wednesday night that doesn't involve the words Steph and Curry. So I'll go first so you guys can think, and I'll give you another name instead of Steph and Curry. Here's why I think the Warriors can beat the Lakers on Wednesday. Jonas Valanciunas. So he doesn't play for the Lakers, right? He plays for Memphis, and he had a huge game against us. He went for 29 and 16. Why do I think that helps the Warriors? The thing I'm terrified about the Warriors matchup with the Lakers is their front court. I think we are going to be destroyed up front. I don't think we're going to be able to get any rebounds. Well, guess what happened in Memphis? Exactly that. Valanciunas went for 29 and 16. They beat our ass, and we still walked away with the win. So, you know, reason to think, reason some optimism here. I'll give you another one. LeBron is less than healthy. This fool got hurt on March 20th. He's only played four games since March 20th. And just on Sunday, retweaked his ankle. He came out, Vogel came out, everyone came out and said that it's just a tweak and he'll be fine. But if they are anything less than 100%, another reason to think the Warriors can sneak one out. What do you guys got?
Yeah, it's a really good point about Jonas Valanciunas in that you see a lot of drop coverage coming from him, and I think we're going to see that. It looks like Andre Drummond has pushed his way into actually getting some serious minutes, at least when Anthony Davis isn't playing small ball five, and that's just like feasting room for Steph at the perimeter. So I think for him, for Montrezl Harrell, Marcus Gasol is a little bit more savvy, so you might actually see a little bit more of an avoidance of that space, but there's good reason to think that that's going to allow us to get a couple more threes off, and there's reason to be excited. Of course, the flip side of that is that you have LeBron James probably playing the four there, making some things pretty difficult, causing whoever's going to play. I mean, Kevon is probably our biggest center that we'd have to throw out there against these guys, and there's going to be some problems as they're switching back and forth, and who knows? Like you said, this is a one-game playoff. It's very possible that they're going to do that break in case of emergency, play Anthony Davis at the five for the majority of the game if it looks like it's being tight, at which point I don't know that we're going to have much answer.
You got some optimism, MT?
I do. The answer I would give that doesn't use the word Steph or Curry would be Andrew and Wiggins. I was thoroughly impressed and happily proven wrong by him. I was a fan of him during the regular season and always appreciated how he kind of stepped it up on the defensive end and, you know, has been fairly efficient on the offensive end as well. But he just came through clutch. Like, you know, some of his buckets were timely in terms of keeping the momentum going or stopping the momentum from shifting the other way too much. And I don't think that can be overstated that he was a big reason why we won that game. Obviously, Steph had what can only be described as a quiet 46 is a weird way to say it, but it still was kind of a quiet 46 for Steph standards. So I just think Andrew Wiggins is kind of the X factor. And yes, rebounding and front court is going to be a big thing. We actually out rebounded Memphis that game by 7. So I don't think that happens again. And we have to be uber careful and uber, attentive to crashing the glass, boxing out. And it's tough with Drummond, who, you know, can get you 20 and 20 on any given night. So it's a big game ahead of us, but I agree. I think rebounding and not turning the ball over are our biggest things.
Yeah. Well, and now that we can use the word Steph and Curry after we've gotten past that question, I mean, the biggest reason they might be able to win this goddamn game is Steph can beat anybody in a one game setting. They're not going to be favored. I think the line opened at 7. It's currently at 4.5, which means people are dumping money on the Warriors, by the way. But Vegas still thinks that the Lakers are favorites. And let me ask you this one, because I'm kind of fired up for it. Who is the most hateable Laker? And I'm going to take this question and make it 2. Let's separate it out. So who's the most hateable Laker on this current roster? And then who is the most hateable Laker, in your opinion, all time? And you know what I kind of like about the all-time thing? It'll give us a sense of all of our respective generations. It's like asking, you know, who you think of when you think of Batman. It'll give a sense of when you grew up. For me, most hateable right now. So easy answer is LeBron, you know, but he kind of took that away from me. Like what James has done off the court recently has made it super hard to bring that kind of F you hatred I have always brought. So I think for me now, it's one of the random guys. It's either Kyle Kuzma or Alex Caruso. I think it's Caruso. I think it's his weird combination of totally unfounded competency and confidence with his balding hairline and just the whole thing. He looks like a G League guy. He has an annoying scowl. I'm not a big fan. Don't like his headband. Same things kind of apply to Kuzma. Remarkably hateable face. So currently, those are my guys. I'll save my all-time. Give me your current. We'll go to all-time.
Got it. For me, current is definitely Dennis Schroeder.
Hair. Is it the hair?
It's not the hair. It's the way that he like draws fouls. And then when he gets like knocked down, he gets up and gets upset that you knocked him down. But he puts himself in a position to get like thoroughly pushed down to the ground. So, and then he's like, he's just always upset and always like completely taken aback that anybody would like push him that way or like foul him that hard. It was like, dude, nobody likes you. Of course we're going to hit you that hard. So it's an easy choice for me. I just don't like that dude playing. Never liked him, you know, with OKC last season and even before that when he was with Atlanta. So easy pick for me.
I actually did a 8-part research paper and looked into a lot of reasons why people foul Schroeder. And it's strange. There's actually only one. It's the hair. Everyone just hates the hair. Maxine, what do you got?
You know, I think Kuzma is an easy one just because he puts out some pretty strange post-game interviews. But I'm actually going to go with KCP. A little bit of this is personal. He was on my fantasy team the first year, and he was just abysmal for me. And I was expecting him to be great. He's going to be my ace in the pocket. And so he's kind of let me down personally.
I never would have guessed that. I thought when you said personally, like maybe punch you in the face at some point, but I'll take the fantasy thing. Fine.
Well, he also, I mean, he keeps on not showing up to my meditation circles, and that kind of takes me, you know.
Well, then you must hate a lot of players. That's the baseline for the guys you dislike all time. So this is hard. A while back, I would have told you it was Mark Madsen. Something about his championship parade speech in Spanish super annoyed me.
And to those who speak Spanish, les agradecemos y les decimos que el año que viene lo haremos otra vez.
And I've kind of held on to that for a long time. But now I think, and here's a name from the past and a random one, Sasha Vucevic. I remember hating the way that dude took his hair and put it behind his ears after every free throw. I remember hating his face when he hit 15 footers. I was just, everything that he did annoyed me in a way that is completely inappropriate for sports watching. So Sasha, that's my guy. Also, first name Sasha on an NBA guy just doesn't sit well for me.
Oh, for sure. You're going to say Jordan Farmar. My text messages are riddled with jokes of you making about Jordan Farmar, but
I don't think that's true. Jordan Farmar is Jewish. I've got nothing but love for Jordan. Big ears, not that good of a player, but you know, he's a Jew, so that goes a long way for me.
Apparently a missed casting in Buffy the Vampire Slayer too, if you look at your text messages.
Don't you worry about that. What, just keep reading, and what it ultimately says is, Buddy's Jewish and I love him. So
and he's amazing.
He's so good.
I think for me, all-time Laker haters, I don't really have a legit reason why I just never liked him, was Rick Fox.
He didn't have a legit reason why. He's Rick Fox, dude. Everybody hates Rick Fox.
Well, there you go. Just something about, like, it never seemed like he was playing that hard, like he was running that hard or moving that fast or trying that hard, and he would still, like, hit threes and like come up with key plays. And I'd be like, how are you doing this? Like, I just didn't get it, but I'm gonna go Rick Fox on that.
He was uber successful. He's like on TV. He's got like a super hot wife, like wearing all those rings. Yeah, no, I disliked him too. Not as much as I hated Jordan Farmar, but almost as much.
Yeah, for me, it's Dwight Howard. That was like an early intro. Yeah, absolutely. What do you mean?
All time?
Yeah, this is the beginning of an era where I started watching basketball. The Warriors were bad.
Which was like 2 years ago, and you decided you hated KCP and Dwight Howard. I mean, I don't feel like this history is going too far back.
What are you talking about?
Yeah, go ahead. I'm anxious to hear why you hate Dwight Howard.
I mean, so many reasons, right? I think he was sort of epitomizing the success, sort of like the Shaq style of like he should be better than he actually is. I really hated that he like ate candy when I was like trying to get really healthy. You know, he had this like cheesy grin. I don't know, just everything about the way the dude operated on and off the basketball court was kind of antithetical to my lifestyle.
I did not think really on either of those two people. I didn't think we were going to hear KCP or Dwight Howard. So good for you for head faking me yet again. Boys, LeBron said that Steph is the MVP in this quote.
You know, we're playing versus, in my opinion, the MVP of our league this year and Steph. So you can look what he's done this year. I mean, there's nobody. Everybody counting him out this year. Everybody saying that, well, now that, you know, Clay is hurt, can Steph lead a team on his own? What is he going to be able to do? Can he carry a team on his own? Can he carry a team into the postseason? Can he keep a team afloat? he's done that and more. I think he's has the most 40-point, I don't know if it was 40-point games or something like that, or the most – he gets the most 3-point, most 10 threes made in a season. He's broke his own record for how many threes he's made this year. I think he scored like 30 points in the second half of games like 8 times this year or 9 times this year. I don't know anything else. If you're looking for MVP, if Steph is not on Golden State's team, then what are we looking at? And we get caught up in a record sometimes. We get caught up in, okay, who has the best record? And, you know, instead of just saying who had the best season that year, and Steph has had, in my opinion, the best season, all year. And it was the same, you know, when Russ won the MVP, Russ was, you know, first guy to have a triple double in the season since the Big O, and everyone threw the records out the window then when he won it. And I think, you know, you look at what he's doing, Steph is just like, you know, Russ deserved it that year, and obviously I don't think Steph is going to get it because, you know, that's another conversation. But in my eyes, he's played the best basketball all year round.
Listening to it, do you guys think he's playing mind games or just paying a compliment?
Both. I think LeBron's too smart to not play a little bit of psychological warfare with that, but I also think he believes it. There's been plenty of great seasons that Steph has had, and LeBron would get behind the mic and say, I'm the MVP. I know the narrative won't support it, but I'm the MVP. And he came out and it sounded pretty sincere that he believes what Steph has done has been MVP worthy. So, but you always have to look at it a little skeptically because you realize you're about to take that person on. It's like, is he trying to take the edge off of Steph in any way?
Nobody cares more about and is actively more aware of legacy, I think, in the NBA right now than LeBron James. And because of that, I agree with it on both ends. He understands the importance of an acronym like MVP, and he understands what his opinion on an acronym like the MVP meets. So if he wanted to play mind games, and he's certainly capable of it, and he wanted to just play mind games, I don't think it would have involved the terms most valuable player. But the other side of that is, does he want to slightly get into Steph's head? Will he try to get any advantage he possibly can? And has he been playing long enough where he knows how to take advantage of the media circus that will happen when he says something like that? Of course. So, 51-49, 49-51. I don't know which is more, but I think that there's elements on both sides of what it is that he said. How about you, Maxime?
Yeah, I think, of course you're right. This dude is way too smart and media savvy, but I also do think it's a win-win. if the Lakers beat the Warriors, it's just a classy move. You know, it's a nod to somebody that's having an unbelievable, unprecedented season. And if the Warriors end up beating the Lakers, LeBron has something to point to where he can say, yeah, well, I said he was the MVP. It's not that surprising.
And here's another question whose answer I'm fired up for. Like, going through these, I should have announced up front, Warriors Oracle is our Warriors mailbag. So these all came from listeners, and when I read this one, I smiled. Of the Western playoff cities, what team city would you like to avoid living in at all costs? So pick one of these cities, boys, and tell us why you would never want to live there. Here's the 10 options: Utah, Phoenix, Denver, LA, Dallas, Portland, the Bay, Memphis, and San Antonio. We all live in the Bay, so obviously we can take that one down. MT, give us first. Of those, what's a spot you would just never want to stay?
I'm obviously going to pick the one that both of you are going to pick too. Utah, hands down. It's racist. Everybody says it. Everybody knows it. Everybody's talked about it. I don't care what Donovan Mitchell says, that he's trying to work on it. He hasn't worked on it enough. Karl Malone didn't help. Brian Russell didn't help. Nobody helped.
You don't think one black man will be able to defeat racism?
Exactly.
Utah? Yeah. That's not all it's going to take.
So everybody, players, Matt Barnes, everybody's all said, oh, the worst place in the league, most racist place, Utah, hands down. So I don't want to go live there. I'm cool.
I would never want to live there, but it's actually not the spot I'm going to pick, but I'm going to use that as a tease. Maxime, what city would you never want to live in?
Jeez, wow. Now I'm really interested. So I actually flew through Utah on a way to visit a friend and was pleasantly surprised by how beautiful it is. It's really too bad that it's racist as f***. I definitely don't want to live there.
So years ago, a friend of mine was getting married and he had a bachelor party in Portland. And one of the reasons that he picked Portland is it supposedly has more strip clubs than any other spot. And I was fired up to go and we went. And at the end of the evening, it's kind of like the jewel of the night. What we were supposed to be doing is we went to the strip club. And within like the first 5 or 6 minutes, dude, I'm there and I'm looking around and I see this guy. He must have been, I don't know, maybe like mid-50s. And he's dressed like a Depression era clown. I mean, like, full thing, dude, like face makeup, the clothes, the big shoes. It's kind of like sad makeup, the whole thing. It is a full bone clown in the middle of a strip club. I felt like I was in a scene from It. And first I see him and it upsets me. And then I start looking around and nobody is even noticing.
No.
Like, not are they not upset. It's as if they can't even see him. And I finally turn to this guy next to me and I go, what's up with the clown? And the guy says, what clown? Well, I was f***ing out of there. I left immediately. I refuse to be in a location where clowns do not stand out in any setting. So I get outside, realize immediately that my phone's Uber account is no longer working. I have to walk home like 4 miles. I hated every minute of it. It was cold as shit. It was raining because it was Portland. So it's Portland, dude. I'm never going back there. The entire thing was creepy as hell. Whoever that guy was in the clown makeup, get your life together. That's a very weird thing you're doing, even if nobody else had the balls to tell you anything. So, I mean, I'm also not moving to Utah, but for just F Portland purposes, it's Portland for me. Absolutely.
That clown was actually Jordan Farmar. He just fell on rough times and
okay.
I'm upset.
It was you. I know who it was, dude. I've seen you since. I saw the clothes in your apartment. I think it's super weird and I don't know why you were doing that. And I will never forgive you for it. Let me just say that.
What clown? I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, God damn it. You're probably dressed in clown makeup right now. Depression era weirdo makeup. I mean, honestly, would that bother you guys? Like, you go in, take away the strip club setting, make it anywhere else, like a restaurant, something. You go inside, someone's dressed like a clown and nobody is reacting. Would you be able to stay there or do you have to get the hell out?
At a certain point, I'd be questioning my own sanity. Like, are you sure that there actually was a clown there? Have you been tested for schizophrenia? Yeah,
yes. No, I've since talked to a few people and confirmed that, in fact, that guy, I wasn't the only person who saw
him. Yeah, I mean, I probably would leave if everybody else thought it was normal. I might stay. Otherwise, I don't know.
Whose legacy, boys, will this game impact more? LeBron or Steph?
I got to say Steph. I think that LeBron has won 3 titles with 3 different teams. I think his stature as the best player of his generation is unquestioned. I think that, you know, his two-way impact, he's just a bigger dude. He's so smart. Nobody has anything slanderous to say about LeBron's presence on the court, whereas people continue to hate on Steph. And so his ability to once again knock LeBron out, especially this time with the supporting cast, which is by far the weakest that he's gone up against with against LeBron in a playoff setting, I think to me there's no question that Steph has more to gain here.
Yeah, it's one of those no-lose analysis, right? I mean, I feel like if Steph wins, it helps him. If he loses, it won't have any impact. And then for LeBron, it's the opposite, really. I mean, a win, I don't think changes anything, and a loss probably doesn't change anything for him either. Let's change the question, MT, and let me put it this way to you. If the Warriors win, will beating LA mean more to you than the We Believe series?
No, but it'll be close. The We Believe series, to me, just put the whole franchise back on the map and in people's minds. And like, we had celebrities in the stands, you know, and like, it was just a whole thing. So I think that was a cultural moment that even as big as this matchup is and this one game is, it won't be able to replicate, but it's close. I mean, having a, you know, Steph LeBron playing game is major. It's not win or go home. Both teams will go on to play another game, just depending on where in the tournament they go. But I don't think so, but it's close. But I'm just worried the way Steph never shoots well in Staples. And friend of the pod, Drew Schiller, tweeted this, and the last eight games that Steph has played in Staples against the Lakers, he's 1-for-10, 0-for-10, 4-for-10, 3-for-9, 2-for-10, blah, blah, blah. It's combined 16-for-77, which is 20.8%. And I just, you know, like, it stood out because I remember thinking to myself, like, he never plays well in this arena, whether it's the Lakers or the Clippers logo on there. He just doesn't shoot well in that arena. I don't know what it is. So it's just making me nervous because we need flamethrower Steph, and he's normally not flamethrower in that building.
Yeah, I think we need flamethrower Steph in the first quarter. I think we need to punch him in the mouth right from the outset. So that stat doesn't make me that fired up. As far as the We Believe impact, the teams are more exciting to me, you know, beating Dallas, beating LA. Oh, I prefer beat LA, but the stakes are way less. You know, when we beat Dallas, they were done for the year. If we beat LA, they're not. Just like you said, they got another game. So it's not going to impact it quite as much. But friend of the pod, Rusty, actually put out a story today that I really enjoyed. And what he was talking about is the obvious connection, some of the lines you can draw between this team and We Believe. Let me give you an example. They said that the We Believe team and this team both have point guard magicians, Baron Davis, Steph Curry. They said that both teams had a guard who was surging in their second season, Monte Ellis, Jordan Poole. He said that both teams had a small forward who was shedding labels, Jay Rich, Andrew Wiggins. They said both teams had a forward who was tough and defending their home turf, Matt Barnes, JTA. They had people who were a little too small for their position, but still played above it, in Al Harrington and Kevon Looney, and that they had one guy who is the unquestioned heart of both teams, Steven Jackson, Draymond Green. I like it, you know? Like, I don't know if it's an immediate comparison, but those five buckets certainly match up.
Wow, that honestly really resonates with me. I'm surprised as you continued going down. It's like, oh, there's a comparison for, like, everybody.
Yeah, that was the same kind of way. Because when I first jumped in, I was like, oh, this is bullshit. You know, we're going to run out of comparisons after Steph. And then by the fourth one, I was like, this is the We Believe squad. We should call Rusty. Let me give you a couple of quick hits. First, who has more assists on Wednesday, LeBron or Draymond? I go Dray.
Draymond.
How many points and threes for Steph? 44 and 8. Staples Center.
31 and 6.
Like Steph says, he's aware of all of the chatter. 56 and 10.
Let's nice. Go. Over, under, 223. So Vegas gives you a number for the game. What it is asking is if you add both teams' scores at the end of the game, will it be over or under this number? So Vegas put it at 223. What do you guys take? I take the over because if the Warriors are going to win, it's going to be behind a high-scoring effort, hopefully.
I'm going to go the under. Warriors finished the regular season fifth-ranked defense in the league, and I think they will need to call upon that if we're going to eke this one out.
As I finished the last sentence, I thought to myself, actually, it'll probably be with defense. I hope nobody points, and then f***ing Marcus just immediately did. Stupid ass clown narrator Marcus had to have his terrible take. Maxime, over under.
Yeah, Marcus is probably right, but I'm taking the over.
We're erasing this question. That question's stupid. Will Draymond have a triple double?
Oof.
No, but it'll be close.
I think yes, and it's one of the rare times that we lose because of it.
Oh,
I have to say no. I was just waiting for you to answer, Marcus, so I could disagree with it. Whichever one you said, I was going the other way. So no, even though I think he's going to get it. Who scores more, Jordan Poole or Dennis Schroeder?
Oh, I hope it's Poole, but it's probably going to be Schroeder.
I think it's Poole. I don't think in crunch time, because Schroeder doesn't have a ton of playoff experience, right?
No, and he's battling an injury a little bit too.
Yeah. Nah, I'm gonna go Poole, even though Poole doesn't have any either. Like, that's a weird argument for a playoff experience.
But he seemingly doesn't care. I mean, Poole seems to kind of be that guy, like, let's just let it fly and see what happens. Last question, boys. Who wins?
I'm going with heart. I'm going to say the Warriors, obviously. If I had to put money on it, I think, and jumping a few games ahead, I think the Warriors lose this one to the Lakers, unfortunately. I think they play Memphis again. We beat them again. And then we go play Utah, and it's a tough series that we lose 4-1.
I say Warriors win by 4. Bet the money line.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm not going to put a line on it, but I do think that the Warriors win. It's currently 40% chance that the Warriors win it. And look, man, they're going to come out and punch them in the mouth. I think there's all sorts of reasons to think that we have a chance here.
I love it. Let's just keep it at that sense of optimism. You know, we appreciate you guys. Thank you for listening. And where I want to end this is with a shout out to our Patreon crew. We actually have a couple new members. Our boy Russell joined us, and our boy Brad joined us. You have no idea what that support means, how it helps us out, and really just how awesome you are. So thank you. If you want to join them helping us, hop up on patreon.com. Search out Warriors Huddle, and you can help us for as little as $1 a month. And that'll actually give you access to our Curry History Watch, which is kind of an exciting contest. With that in mind, go Warriors, F LeBron, and hopefully we'll see you next week.
Good, good.